Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Institutional investors deserve tailored portfolio solutions created by investment experts who understand their portfolio needs. MetLife Investment Management's client-first approach to managing public fixed income, private capital, and real estate assets is institutional, but far from typical. Learn more at MetLife.com/institutional. That's MetLife.com/institutional.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 1st of July, these are our main stories. The Democratic candidate for US President Joe Biden has made a blistering attack over Donald Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, as there's a warning that new virus cases could double to 100,000 a day. An explosion and a fire at a hospital in the centre of the Iranian capital has killed at least 13 people. And China's new national security law for Hong Kong has come into effect, allowing those convicted to be jailed for life. Also in this podcast...
I had an ability to make people laugh. Then I got to be a good embellisher. And that was the beginning of writing. When I hear a four-line joke, I would tell it as a long story. And I think that's what writers are. They embellish.
Karl Reiner, the prolific writer, comedian, director, and actor, has died, aged 98. With coronavirus infections rising in most US states, President Trump's handling of the pandemic has been sharply criticized by the Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden. Speaking at a rally in Wilmington, Delaware, Mr. Biden accused the president of making a series of mistakes, from refusing to wear a mask to ignoring the science. He said that in the fight against the virus, Donald Trump had surrendered and had left the battlefield.
You know, the steps you've taken so far haven't gotten the job done, Mr. President. Fix the shortage of PPE for our healthcare workers before you tee off another round of golf. We can't just look at where we are today. We're going to need these masks and gloves and face shields for the foreseeable future. And we need to be ready. We know more is coming.
Earlier, the top infectious disease expert in the US, Dr. Anthony Fauci, told a Senate hearing that the virus was not under control and he wouldn't be surprised if new cases reached 100,000 per day. That's more than double the current rate.
We can't just focus on those areas that are having the surge. It puts the entire country at risk. We are now having 40-plus thousand new cases a day. I would not be surprised if we go up to 100,000 a day if this does not turn around, and so I am very concerned.
We heard more from our reporter in Washington, Anthony Zerka, starting with Mr. Biden's comments.
He said that Donald Trump had an opportunity this year to prepare the U.S. for the virus that we knew was coming and that he squandered it. He said that Donald Trump called himself a wartime president, but he essentially surrendered to the virus. I mean, among the things that he said that Trump should have done and that he would do on day one if he wins the presidency in November is improving testing and contact tracing, improving the supplies of personal protective equipment, that's masks and gloves and gowns, work harder in developing a vaccine, and then from once that's all taken care of, focusing on reopening the economy. Now, I'll say that Donald Trump has made progress on a lot of those areas after a slow start. The PPEs, the protective equipment, is more available now than it was before. There's a lot of work going on vaccine. But Biden says all of that should have been done earlier.
And yesterday, Mr. Trump's press secretary was sort of saying that the U.S. was dealing with the embers of the pandemic. Today, Dr. Fauci was saying that the numbers are heading absolutely in the wrong direction. Just how damaging could the handling of COVID-19 be to Donald Trump's hope for re-election in November?
Well, politically, it could be really damaging. I mean, you know, Americans have been hoping that there would be some daylight at the end of this tunnel that they've been in, that there's some hope that things could return to normal. And right now, it's very much heading in the opposite direction, with businesses closing again and with shelter-in-place orders coming back out again. So all of that, you know, is going to create a sense of despair for many Americans. And if Americans aren't feeling good about the future, that's not a good mood for an incumbent president to be running for re-election. So I think that if the economy continues to go south once these new lockdown orders go in place, there's not a lot of good news that Donald Trump can run on.
And just finally, he did have some good news today with a judge, temporarily at least, blocking publication of a book by his niece.
This book by Mary Trump, the daughter of Fred Trump Jr., who died in the early 80s. It was supposed to be published on July 28th. Donald Trump's brother, Robert, has filed an injunction trying to block its publication, saying that Mary violated a 20-year-old legal document of non-disclosure she signed during her grandfather's death, the estate being divided up between them. Essentially, this is a tell-all book. This is a temporary injunction, however. There is a court date now for July 10th. That's when the merits of this case will be discussed, and that's when we really will know if there's any kind of standing to block this.
That was Anthony Zerker in Washington. Doctors in Afghanistan say the healthcare system is being overrun with coronavirus cases. According to official statistics, there have been just over 30,000 infections and fewer than 1,000 deaths. But with extremely low levels of testing, it's thought the actual figures are far, far higher. Healthcare workers have complained about a lack of essential supplies and hospital beds, with many blaming corruption for hampering efforts to fight the disease. Sikandar Kamani reports.
It's a battle just to breathe for Nazir Ahmed. With hospital beds full, he's being treated at home for coronavirus. Lying down on a row of cushions with an oxygen mask attached to his face and a cylinder nearby. So many Afghans are being forced to do the same. The price of oxygen has doubled in recent weeks. The government should at least provide us with oxygen, his cousin tells us. I can buy the empty cylinder, but the oxygen is expensive. Hospitals in Afghanistan have always been stretched. Now they're being overwhelmed. The lack of resources made even worse by another disease, corruption. I've been speaking to a number of doctors anonymously. Many are angry. Money meant for staff and equipment isn't reaching the front lines.
One night, many patients died because there was no staff to take care of them. Their relatives even fought and broke windows in the hospital. They were very furious.
How does that make you feel as a doctor?
It's really depressing and frustrating. I don't know what they are doing in the government. All are corrupt.
Afghanistan, the health department...
Public anger is growing after a series of investigative news reports in the local media. In this leaked audio message, a man offers to sell ventilators he claims are stolen from the government and smuggled out the country. In another case, a health department employee was arrested for allegedly demanding an $80,000 bribe to complete a contract with a company making protective equipment for healthcare workers. The government had promised to investigate all the allegations, but corruption and coronavirus are adding to the misery of the ongoing conflict. The Taliban have been increasing their attacks, even as slow progress is made towards the first direct talks with the Afghan government. And the new crisis is making the fight against other, older diseases even harder. Afghanistan is one of only two countries where polio still exists. With vaccination campaigns suspended, cases have now been found in provinces previously thought to be free from infection. Dr. Rick Peppercorn is the World Health Organization representative in the country.
There were substantial, over the last 10, 15 years, substantial progress when it comes to specifically infant and child mortality and other primary healthcare indicators. But again, they are fragile. They are definitely under threat. Look what in high-income countries, how we talk about the impact on the devastating impact on the economy. It will be much more severe in Afghanistan.
That economic impact of coronavirus is already being felt. In a country where more than half the population are below the poverty line, queues are growing at centres distributing cash handouts. Afghans are fighting a war on many different fronts.
Sikandar Kamani reporting. At least 13 people have been killed in an explosion at a medical clinic in the capital, Tehran. Television pictures showed a big fire with plumes of smoke billowing into the sky. Rana Rahimpour reports.
The blast at Sina Atar Medical Clinic in north of Tehran was so large that it has damaged the buildings in the vicinity. Thick black smoke could be seen in the night sky. The clinic was a five-story building with a small operating theatre. According to local reporters, the majority of those killed were patients of the clinic. The cause of the explosions is still unclear, but Tehran's vice governor says it was probably a gas leak.
That was Rana Rahimpour. Since 1997, Hong Kong has been a special administrative region of China, guaranteed a high level of autonomy under one country, two systems policy. Now, though, Beijing has brought in a new security law, which critics say effectively curtails protest and freedom of speech. It was published at midnight local time. The new legislation includes banning what it calls subversion of the central government and gives China wide-ranging powers over the territory. The UK, EU and NATO have all expressed concern. China says the law is needed to tackle unrest and instability linked to a broadening pro-democracy movement. Hong Kong's chief executive Carrie Lam, who's appointed by Beijing, said the threat of interference by foreign powers had made the law necessary.
Some local politicians proclaimed that they would paralyze the Hong Kong SAR government, while others campaigned for foreign governments to interfere in Hong Kong's affairs, or even to impose sanctions on Hong Kong. No central government could turn a blind eye to such threats to sovereignty and national security, as well as risks of subversion of state power.
But opponents say the law undermines the autonomy set out in Hong Kong's mini-constitution. Howard Zhang from the BBC Chinese Service told us more about the new laws and what they mean for Hong Kong.
Let me give you some of the detailed clauses in this bill for people to actually understand what this sword is all about. First of all, I think one of the things really stood out is item 14. To protect national security in Hong Kong, all decisions made by the National Security Committee in Hong Kong are not subject to any interference from any organization, any government, department, or any individual. And no judicial review is allowed. And of course, there are other items saying the equivalent of Chinese secret police will be stationed permanently in Hong Kong. And item 20, separatism is not necessarily defined by violence. So even nonviolent act can be defined as a separatist act. It can be illegal. And item 22, we're looking at any words of down with the government is criminal.
So what does this mean for the one country, two systems idea by which Hong Kong was supposed to be guaranteed a high degree of autonomy? Where does that leave that?
If you talk to Beijing, despite all this new stringent security laws they introduced, they will still argue Hong Kong is an autonomous region. But of course, if you talk to anyone, you know, including the last governor of Hong Kong, British governor of Hong Kong, Lord Paton, he would say the one country, two system is dead.
Now, it was last year, around this time last year, that there were protests began on the streets of Hong Kong over the plans to allow extradition to mainland China. And now, would you expect to see more protests on the basis of the passing of this law? And what might the response to that be?
We'll know more tomorrow, because this morning, in Hong Kong time, many of the past protest leaders have come out and announced the dissolution of all their organizations. And all the pro-democracy organizations have been dissolved. And they said they will go on fighting more in individual capacity. And quite a few organizations have called for mass protests tomorrow. But with the new law, if the government or the police deem any of the slogans or protesters chants are a threat to national security, then the police could do mass arrest. Essentially, you know, but whether that will happen, it's for us to see.
That was Howard Zhang. Well, Regina Ip is one of those Hong Kong politicians who support the new law. She's a member of Hong Kong's Executive Council and Legislative Council and a former government secretary for security. And she told Julian Marshall why she thinks it's needed.
Because we have loopholes in our legislation. We inherited a few national security offences like treason, sedition from the British era, but we don't have laws to prohibit subversion, secession, local terrorist activity, and collusion with foreign and external forces. The events of the last year, which were pretty violent, compelled the central authorities to take action on our behalf. We have not been able to fulfill our constitutional obligation for 23 years. So I think Beijing has no option but to take action for us.
If there were such loopholes in Hong Kong's existing legislation, could they not have been tightened within Hong Kong itself by the Legislative Council?
That's a good question. Our legislature has been in gridlock for many months. There has been so much filibuster in our legislature that our House Committee was not able to elect even a chairperson to get our housekeeping business done for 6 months. Because of the riots, our legislative work has ground to a halt.
But this new security law has the feeling of using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. Have the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong really been such a threat to China's national security as the government in Beijing insists?
The protests were not quite just a nut. There was quite serious violence. Our Legislative Council building was literally sacked and occupied for hours, with extensive damage to our properties. National and regional emblems defaced, and key infrastructure, railways vandalized, people set on fire. That's pretty violent by Hong Kong standards. We certainly don't want this sort of political violence to further deteriorate.
Hong Kong politician Regina Ip. Well, Bonnie Leung is a pro-democracy campaigner in Hong Kong, and Julian Marshall asked her if she is reassured at all by such declarations that fundamental freedoms will remain in place in the territory.
Of course not. Promises, empty promises like that, the pro-Beijing people always try to say and try to reassure Hong Kong people. But because Hong Kong people had been lied to too many times, and anyone who have a little understanding of the history of the Chinese Communist Party would know that such promises cannot be trusted. So if you have seen anything of the movements last year, you know that at least 2 million Hong Kong people would not trust promises like that. And at least 2 million of us tried our best to talk to the streets despite the potential dangers of being arrested, of being physically harmed by police brutality, trying to fight for our democracy, our rule of law and our basic freedoms. And obviously, the Chinese Communist Party lost their patience and decided to take things in their own hand, passing our legislature.
Could it just be that the pro-democracy protesters pushed their luck? They took it too far, that there should have come a point at which they actually sat down and talked to the authorities in Hong Kong about the way forward?
That is exactly how the Chinese Communist Party or the Hong Kong government tried to spin it that way. But if you have seen the timetable last year, Hong Kong people have started the whole movement by talking to the government, trying to be consulted, trying to give our advice to them about the extradition bill. And then we're not listened. And then 1 million people took to the street totally peacefully. But within hours of ending our peaceful protest, they announced that the extradition bill would simply carry on. So step by step, they forced Hong Kong people to have no choice but to escalate our actions to protect our home, our city.
Bonnie Leung, a pro-democracy campaigner in Hong Kong. As countries around the world begin to ease lockdown, people in the Czech Republic have held a dinner party at the capital's biggest landmark as a symbolic farewell to the coronavirus crisis. A 500-metre-long table was laid out on the medieval Charles Bridge in Prague as several thousand strangers sat down to enjoy a meal together. It was bring-your-own-everything, but that didn't spoil the mood, as Rob Cameron reports from Prague.
Above the music and the clinking of cutlery, one heard a most unusual sound for this iconic landmark, people speaking Czech. largely free of foreign tourists, Charles Bridge was transformed on this gloriously sunny evening into one long dining table as people gathered to mark what organisers described as the end of a period of crisis, although everyone here freely admitted that such celebrations might well turn out to be premature.
Now, I think that the second wave is already here, probably coming soon, especially after this event. But yeah, so far we are all enjoying. No, I was joking, but we'll see. But let's not think about it right now, right here, and just enjoy it.
Certainly, however, there is a sense here that through swift and decisive action, Czechs have dodged a bullet. There have been just under 12,000 infections for this country of 10 million and around 350 deaths. Relaxing the lockdown has not sent the numbers soaring. There are several local outbreaks far from Prague, which is only recording around 15 infections a day. There was a palpable sense of optimism on the bridge this evening, as people remembered what it was like to live again.
Rob Cameron in Prague. Still to come in this podcast.
Without urgent government intervention, the koala will become extinct in New South Wales before 2050.
Concern in Australia about the future of one of the world's favourite animals. Tens of thousands of people have been staging demonstrations in towns and cities across Sudan to press for greater political reform. The security forces have been deployed in Khartoum and elsewhere. Catherine Biarahanga has this report.
Crowds have gathered, singing and chanting, blaring car horns and carrying placards. These are scenes similar to the ones during months of protests, which ended Omar al-Bashir's decades-long rule and led to the formation of a joint civilian and military government. But there's growing concern that the country's hopes for political reform and true civilian rule will not be met. Today's protesters want corruption stamped out, justice for those killed under Bashir and after him, as well as for a promised parliament to be set up.
That was Catherine Biarahanga. To Germany now, and the country's defence minister, Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, has said she's ordered the partial dissolution of the elite KSK commando force, which has come under growing criticism over right-wing extremism in its ranks. Damian McGuinness in Berlin told us that such allegations about the KSK date back to 2017.
There was a leaving party of a commander within the KSK. It was found that right-wing extremist rock music was played there. Soldiers were seen giving the Hitler salute. There are allegations that Nazi memorabilia was passed around. Photos were taken. So that's when these allegations started. And since then, there have been regular investigations. A year later, there was a plot that was uncovered in which some KSK soldiers were accused, it seems, of planning to kill left-wing politicians and some allegations say immigrants as well. And then last month as well, police found a stash of weapons and explosives at the home of a KSK soldier. And we've now seen that the German government has said, OK, we've had enough of this. At the beginning of the year already, Germany's defence minister said she would launch an investigation and take some serious action. What she's now done is she said that one entire unit of this elite commando force is going to be completely scrapped. And then the entire rest of the force is going to be completely reformed. So it's a very radical, more than shake-up, really. It's going to be a completely new force.
So these men who have found that their unit, their force is being disbanded, they are armed and trained and organised. How big a worry is this?
I think it depends what happens with the allegations. So in some cases, this is a question of simply a political view, which may or may not be illegal. But of course, in some cases, as you say, these people could be incredibly dangerous in their own right. One of the issues and one of the reasons why the government says it's so important to reorganise the whole KSK is what we found is this loss of munitions and arms have been going missing over the years. And that's one of the fears, that you've got these special forces operating right now who are trained to have access to arms. And it is feared, the allegation goes, that some of them are taking those arms. Stashes have been found of weapons. So to answer your question, Jackie, it's possibly more dangerous to have them having access to the weapons and having them in the special forces in the first place. And that's why the government's taking such drastic action, really.
Damian McGuinness in Germany. A year-long parliamentary inquiry in Australia has delivered a warning about the future of one of the world's favourite animals in the state of New South Wales. Kate Gregan reports.
The future of the koala in what is an important home is at stake.
Without urgent government intervention, the koala will become extinct in New South Wales before 2050.
Kate Fearman, the chair of the parliamentary committee, warned future generations may not see a koala in the wild again if the report is ignored. The once thriving marsupial has been ravaged by habitat loss and disease.
One of the significant findings of this report is that habitat loss and fragmentation poses the most serious threat to koala populations. The koala's future in New South Wales cannot be guaranteed unless the government does more to protect their habitat in New South Wales.
The recent bushfire season was one of the worst in Australian history. It was particularly lethal to the koala population in New South Wales. About 5,000 are thought to have died, and the blazes that scorched more than 5 million hectares statewide affected almost a quarter of koala habitats. Across the rest of the country, koala numbers are falling, with a recent estimate of 80,000 remaining in the wild. The committee said current policies to protect them were failing and made a number of recommendations to safeguard them, including establishing new national parks and reducing land clearing. In a statement, the New South Wales Environment Minister said his state would do everything it could to protect koalas for future generations.
That was Kate Gregan. The American writer, comedian and director Carl Reiner has died at the age of 98. He made his name in the 1950s, writing for Your Show of Shows on American TV. But for years he also played straight man to his great friend Mel Brooks, and he directed several films with Steve Martin. Vincent Dowd looks back at his career.
We'd like to sing our hit song, You Are So Rare. Hit it, Professor!
Carl Reiner started acting in the US Army in World War II. As a writer, he was a product of the first flowering of TV comedy in the early 1950s. Colleagues writing on Your Show of Shows included Neil Simon and Mel Brooks, creating a combination of silliness and satire. Together, Reiner and Brooks developed their own act, The 2,000-Year-Old Man.
What does your diet consist of
very
today?
Very strict diet.
Strict diet?
Very strict. Almost nothing. Cool mountain water.
That's all
just
you eat?
That.
That's all you eat all
that
day?
That and a stuffed cabbage. That's all.
Carl Reiner then became a lead writer on The Dick Van Dyke Show, which he'd created hoping to be the star of himself. He never gave up performing, but Reiner said his fascination with writing came because, as a young man, he loved telling jokes.
I had an ability to make people laugh, but I never wrote anything. You would steal. Then I got to be a good embellisher, and that was the beginning of writing. When I'd hear a four-line joke, I would tell it as a long story and add things. I was a good embellisher, and I think that's what writers are. They embellish.
From the late 70s, Reiner helped shape the career of the comedian Steve Martin. His son, Rob Reiner, also became a major film director. And in his 90s, virtually every day in Beverly Hills, after they both lost their wives, his old friend Mel Brooks would come round to sit on the sofa, watch movies, tell jokes, and recall a lifetime of comedy.
Vincent Dowd on the life of Carl Reiner, who has died. There have been many tributes paid to Carl Reiner. His great friend Mel Brooks released a statement. He said, whether he wrote or performed or was just your best friend, nobody could do it better. And I loved him. Dick Van Dyke said, my idol Carl Reiner wrote about the human comedy. He had a deeper understanding of the human condition than I think even he was aware of. Kind, gentle, compassionate, empathetic, and wise. Just some of the tributes to Carl Reiner, who has died. It will be legal to ride a motor-powered electric scooter on UK roads from this weekend. Well, as long as it's rented from a company with a licence. Privately owned scooters will still be banned. E-scooters could be available to hire in Middlesbrough in northern England from next week, as our transport correspondent Tom Burridge explains.
It wasn't that hard to spot electric scooters being driven illegally on the roads in London today. But from this weekend, they can be driven legally anywhere in the UK if they're on hire from a company with a licence. Users will have to be 16 or over. Initially, they'll have to have a full or provisional driving licence. And the scooters will be programmed so they can't travel faster than 15 miles per hour. Helmets will be recommended, but not mandatory, and you won't be allowed to ride them on pavements or paths. Scooter companies are now bidding to operate their vehicles in towns and cities. The first Scooters for Hire scheme could appear in Middlesbrough next week. Harry Porter works for the Californian scooter firm Bird.
The advantage of electric scooter, of course, is that there's no emissions, there's no pollution, and there's no congestion. I mean, you can go in a bicycle lane and get where you need to go in a matter of minutes.
Electric scooters have been popular in cities such as San Francisco, Paris and Lisbon for years. It was always a question of when and how they would be allowed here in the UK. But the pandemic sped up the process to legalise them because it's another way to get around avoiding public transport.
Tom Burridge reporting. Now it's time for me to get on my e-scooter, or should I say my motorbike.
Motorcycle mama, won't you lay your big spike down?
That really is all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you would like to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, do please send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.
I have a secret. I wore the wrong foundation for years. Then I discovered Il Makiage, the boldest new brand in beauty. With 20,000 five-star reviews and 50 shades of flawless coverage, their Woke Up Like This foundation is a bestseller for a reason. It's tough buying foundation online, but their Power Match quiz matched me perfectly. And with Try Before You Buy, you can try your shade free for 14 days. Take the quiz at ilmakiage.com/quiz. That's ilmakiage.com/quiz.